get started, we have a couple of items this afternoon. First up is a review of the Skyway access request for the Big Brad or Payne building. And Terry, did you want to lead off on that?
No, I'll just quickly lead off to indicate that the city's received a request to provide authorization to place the Skyway Bridge over the alley located between Broadway and First Avenue Southwest, between the 300 and 400 blocks, that would attach the 318 Commons building to the Big Brad's building on the east side of the alley. And I know Hal and Grant have some materials they want to present, so I'll just turn that over to those guys.
All right.
Okay. Great. Go ahead.
Thank you, Terry.
Need any help there with anything? No, we got it.
We can handle it.
Okay.
Good afternoon, President Staver, members of the council. The mayor is somewhere warm. I don't think he's here today, but smart guy. Thank you for giving us a chance to speak to our proposal. Relatively modest proposal, quite honestly, but we have a fairly in-depth proposal that we'd like to have you see today. It raises some other questions. Before I go any further, I would like to introduce Grant Michaels. Grant is my partner on 318 Commons, GH Holdings, and Vern O'Brien is the manager of 318 Commons sitting next to Grant. So if there are any other questions, Grant may have some answers to Vern as well. So. As you know from the letters you received and background information you have, we're simply requesting a connection out of that back northeast corner of 318 Commons to the building, which has been referred to as the former Payne building, furniture building, which is not actually accurate. It's actually a building that's occupied by a bar referred to as Big Brad's, but we'll call it 309 South Broadway, if that's okay with everybody here. So, and we'll show you some detailed drawings and exactly what we're referring to. So, first of all, just some images, just so everyone and the audience is familiar. This is a looking at the facades of the former Payne Furniture Building at 309, which is more of that kind of reddish brick building just to the north of the facade of the Payne Furniture Building, just south of the building occupied by Kathy's. So that's the front facade along Broadway. And you can, in that view, you can see 318 Commons in the background. This is actually the alley view of both buildings. The one to your right is the back of the former Payne Furniture Building. The building just right where the Wakes SUV is the actual back wall of the building occupied by Big Brad's or 309 South Broadway. And then just north of that is Kathy's. So you can see there's a fairly distinct difference in the facade treatments along the alley. The Payne Furniture Building has a little bit more character than the original 309 South Broadway building. But that's actually the building that would have the connection at that point. A little closer view of it, basically a blank brick wall with one small window. You can see this is something you've seen 5 or 6 years ago as we were developing 318 Commons. There was a request by the city that we look at ideas to accommodate any future Skyway connections to the 318 Commons building. At one point, there were actually two options considered. This one that's hatched in the upper right-hand corner, which would be the continuation of the current Skyway system directly to the east, via then the alley across, and then whatever building or development occurs on the east side of the alley. As the documents and the agreements matured, this actually was the only future easement that was within the documents. There was another one at one point, which was an alternative, but still exited the building to the east, almost at the midpoint of the east wall of 318 Commons. But that easement is the agreement that we have with the city. We've had for some time that we'd like to just honor and continue with that connection to facilitate a connection to 309 South Broadway, and eventually whatever may happen, who knows in the future, 4, 5, 6, 10 years from now, who knows what direction it may take from there. A little hard to read here, but with some explanation, I think you'll understand what this drawing is showing. This drawing is actually the first floor, basically showing the alley, which is in the north-south or the up direction here, vertical direction. And then on the left side of that is 318 Commons. If you visualize 318 Commons, the main floor is actually set back from the alley, probably about 18 feet. And the second floor actually cantilevers out over, or extends out over that area, covers some parking behind 318 Commons. So the drawing to the right shows the second floor, which shows the actual exterior wall of the second floor of 318 Commons, which shows where the link, elevated link, would connect the 318 Commons. Bridge over the alley, 18 feet. And then probably from the photos you could recognize that those buildings on the east side actually set back about 8 to 10 feet from the alley property line. So there's another distance there that the elevated walkway would have to be constructed in order to connect to the back of the building. That last section, we're intending to build somewhat on a different construction type, maybe a little bit more of a temporary type construction, just for the fact that who knows what could happen on that side of Broadway in the future. And that gives us the flexibility to do something, or the city could, you know, work with us on whatever happens on that side of Broadway at some point. So we have some renderings, and I think the renderings will help you understand a little bit more about what the skyway would look like. As you know, there is a skyway coming in to the west side of the front of 318 Commons, which is essentially a clear glass element that bridges the street. Our plan is to do the same thing, basically mirror that same skyway design and have it pretty much all clear glass, and be very, very much transparent as it bridges the alley. So this will be a view looking down the alley, standing north, looking back down to the south. So the rendering on the right-hand side would show that our intent is just to support the elevated walkway with just two columns, one on the west and one on the east, and cantilevered arrangement so that there really isn't a maze of columns coming down to the ground at that point. But as I mentioned, it's a very simple connection to the back of both buildings. This would be a view looking at it from that previous photo I'd shown you, but also that same photo you can see the current back of 309 South Broadway on the left photograph. The right rendering then shows what the elevated skyway would look like as it engages the back of 309 South Broadway. Again, very transparent. Actually, it probably look a little bit more transparent than that. We're showing spandrel glass on the top and at the bottom. And it pretty much looks exactly like the skyway on the other side of the Beach of the Commons. Just a quick interior view of what it would look like if you were in the upper floor or second floor of 309 South Broadway looking back to 318 Commons. There's an elevation change, which we'd be making up the elevation change within the building. One way or the other, the skyway would pretty much maintain a level floor plane, and any elevation changes would occur in adjacent buildings. So, with that, we're just open for questions. We're making a request just to basically follow through and honor the agreement we had when we signed the development agreement, skyway agreement, 5 or 6 years ago, I think. The interest was to facilitate some future connections to 318 Commons from our second floor. And the skyway agreements and planning at that point indicated that there potentially would be a future skyway that would proceed to the east, might even go over Broadway. But at least during the discussions, that at least if we brought it across the alley, allowed that easement through our building, 318 Commons, that would allow some flexibility for the city to do whatever they decided within a future development. So we did modify our request. Initially, we sent a letter in requesting kind of a standard procedure for construction of skyways, where the developer would pay half, the city would pay the other half. So we modified that request just to help facilitate the process and give the city the benefit of implementing an agreement in the future. If you wanted to use that skyway as a public skyway, then we are open to the idea of the city participating at that time. But at least initially, our plan would be that we would incur the entire cost of building that link. And in the future, the city could come to us and approach us for whatever participation or use potential the city might have at that point.
All right. Just to start off, for the benefit of the audience, we're not deciding this item today. It's just meant for information exchange, questions, and comments, and so forth. So with that in mind, who wants to start? Mr. Hildebeck?
Just, I'm glad you clarified that, because it's important to know that this would come in front of the council at a regular council meeting, probably as a public hearing, I think, is the way to type this. If I remember correctly, Hal, it would be a public hearing at the council?
We haven't had that conversation.
If you want a public hearing, you'd have one. It's not required.
Local permit.
And
under what
what's the nature of the request that would come before the council? Right. Just an agreement?
Actually, the request would be authorization, firstly, to put a structure over public right-of-way.
So there will have to be either an easement or a revocable permit over the alleyway. Is that the only thing that would be requested?
And then ultimately, we would, if the council was agreeable to do something, we would enter into a Skyway agreement with GH Holdings, you know, related to the various design elements, construction, et cetera, of the actual bridge component.
In neither of those cases is a public hearing required, but it's permissible on your on your part.
Otherwise, consent agenda?
Or reports and recommendations.
All right, so, Mr. Bilbao?
Anyhow, Cal, a couple of questions for you. Number one, there was a concern by a property owner on the easement that you guys have had between you and some of the building around you, and making sure that this would have no effect. Is that, can you answer that? That's probably pretty broad asking. We'd have to ask staff to go back and take a look at it as well. The easements around.
I guess I'm not sure. We only have the one easement.
Okay.
If you don't mind, actually I'd like to share something because I'd like to clarify that, I think.
Just that would be
give
good.
Me a second here.
So the, currently, obviously, the current Skyway coming in is an easement. That's your normal
right.
Skyway agreement. But then we do have an easement that comes across here, transitions south, and comes over to our stairway and television, so then down to the main floor.
Okay.
Maybe that's the easement they're referring to, but the one that's hatched is one that's being considered for a future easement.
So actually, in the Skyway agreement that we have that was amended and executed back in 2010, as this is for the actual grant of easement exhibit that was part of that Skyway agreement, there was an exhibit to the grant of easement exhibit, and that indicates that on the first floor, that area highlighted in yellow, what was essentially subject to that grant of easement. Then on the second floor at that time, the area coming from the Skyway Bridge across First Avenue, down the corridor on the north side of the building, over to the hallway that gets you over, essentially over to the elevator pane, was granted that easement. Then what was included is what was referred to as, in that particular document, is the future pedestrian easement areas. And that identified two. Both what Hal indicated before, just extending it and continuing that straight east to the back corner of the building, or as Hal indicated before, there was an option there that potentially a connection would be made further to the south, so it could potentially go beyond the elevator bank and then extend to the east down here. So really what we actually would need, Hal, is that easement document to reflect this. These were two options out there back in 2010, neither of which has been specifically dedicated at this time. But as you mentioned, I think, you know, there really probably isn't going to be the need for this. It was going to be a one or the other location type thing. But at that time, you know, the developer wasn't sure how that might play out. But it obviously sounds like the extension of the existing corridor here is the preferred option. So then we would just go back as part of what we would have to go through would be, you know, a grant of easement for that particular segment.
There is no easement in place covering any of the hatched areas on that screen, correct?
That's correct. Not a non in place. It was only designated as identified as future.
Sorry.
And Hal, with the pillars that you're putting up outside in the alley still has width for the garbage trucks and trucks to get through?
They're actually not in the alley right away. They're set on our property on both sides.
So we have the width.
The cameras, one is on the field.
And all you're asking for at this time is just to go across the back of the alley. That's it.
Just an easement over the top of the alley. That's all we're asking for. No city participation. It would be built to the city Skyway standards. So at whatever point the city wanted to participate with us, it meets all the standards and requirements of a typical Skyway system.
that.
Okay, and Terry, that's helpful to explaining the options of what the developer is proposing to accept. Mr. Ruskin.
Just a point of clarity. What's the length that you're of this skyway from one building to the other? Ballpark.
The distance over the alley is 18 feet, and then there's another, is it 10 feet? From 8 to 10 feet, so a total of 28 feet.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Other questions? Ms. Means.
There have been questions about adjoining the back of Brad's and if it would in any way interfere with any historic value of that property. But it's...
I don't think it would. I mean, like I mentioned, that is kind of that little section of 10 feet we're building a little bit differently, so we have to deal with that. We've done a variety of historic preservation projects and renovations. We've added buildings to historic buildings, and they have completely different architectural character. And it's just a matter of how you want to review and look at the approach. So, regardless, there's time to research what maybe in the future the benefits of having Big Brad's be considered a historic structure, whether it be considered historic or be on the National Register. That's not part of our proposal today at all. Our goal is to get the building activated. That's what buildings are built for, and you can see that the building hasn't been activated for about 10 to 12, maybe longer than that, years. So this is one way of getting it occupied and get the building activated and full of life again.
Thank you.
Hal, on the pictures we've got, and I'm looking at the right-hand picture from my direction, and I'll call that option 1 and 2, the east route and then the other one. And I think one of the questions we've been hearing is whether we want to or whether it would be, you know, advisable to preserve your rights to be able to go south if that ever came up. And option 2 up there looks like potentially it allows you to extend that north-south crosshatch portion further south and perhaps to that vacant lot to the south. And I know that's been part of the kind of the ticklish part of the discussion. I don't know if either option 1 or 2, either way, would potentially get you to the backside of the properties on the Broadway side. But I'm just wondering if you could speak to that option 2 and whether that has perhaps more value in terms of exploiting opportunities to the south if that ever comes to pass.
I think it'd be the same question as what would be happening to the east, across Broadway. I don't know how we can predict what might be proposed 4 or 5 years from now. The time we signed the agreement, the city and the city administration at that time, all they could foresee was a need for an extension to the east, and nobody has a crystal ball, so that's why it's created to the east. As you know, that entire floor is leased by the University of Minnesota, and there's some benefit in the way that floor is configured for their operations, and something slicing through their second floor occupied space would not by any means be ideal, plus we lose more leasable space, permanent scar, if you want to put it that way, through our second floor. Having the easement where we're proposing it, obviously we're giving up leasable space just by doing that. So if we continue to chop up the second floor, it all of a sudden makes that floor pretty well useless. So we've got to be really careful. We can't provide easements every which direction on the building, quite frankly.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything thought about or even conceived at that time. It would be the same question, is there a need for a skyway to go to the south? It's kind of connecting anything across fourth into the south. I think there's ideas that shouldn't happen either. So
and I don't know if that would ever happen either. Right. I'm just asking because it's a question we've been asked. So.
Yeah, it's something that we were approached by the developer Jason a long time ago. Really haven't heard anything other than a recent letter that was sent by their attorney. I think that was a year and a half ago. There was a meeting we had with them, but we heard nothing, and I don't think there's a proposal that the city has in front of them for development, so I don't know how we could respond to it, quite honestly.
Okay.
There's no formal proposal to my knowledge.
Right, right. I'm just posing what-ifs.
Right.
Others, Mr. Roger.
I think the big picture here is we all want our historic buildings to be successful. It's the only way that we're going to protect them in the long run, and if they're sitting empty, they're going to decay and eventually get torn down, and that's certainly not what I want. And I personally have a great deal of respect for HGA and the work that Hal and Grant have done. I mean, they, you know, they get the preservation side, and I don't have I really don't have any issue with the connection per se, so long as we're smart and do the things right now that we need to do to protect our options in the future. And as I was studying this, some of these have been touched on, but I kind of came up with four issues that I think we need to touch on a little bit as part of this, because ultimately this is the time where we have our ability to negotiate, and once the Skyway is up and the access is up, we kind of lose that ability to, we lose our footing in the negotiations. And I do think that I don't ever see the Skyway going south of 4th Street, but I do think we should take a look at the option of connecting up Hallen's property immediately to the south. I don't think we should contribute financially to that, but if we're going to expand the Skyway system, I think this would be the time to figure out how we you know, work with the parties and get the option for an easement to be paid for by that property owner included in the negotiations now. Again, once the negotiations are done with, it's, you know, there's no leverage to try and get that connection in there anywhere in the future. I think the other thing that we want to think about, probably the other buildings on the Broadway side as well. Like I say, the goal here is to activate some of these historic buildings. Now would be the time to include language in whatever our agreement is back and forth, so that now or in the future there's a method for those additional properties on the Broadway side to tie into that what could be possibly become a public Skyway system. I think the third thing is that when we talked about preservation quite a bit, we talked about using, you know, you can use sticks or you can use carrots. Obviously, the granting of a Skyway easement is one of the biggest carrots that we have in the downtown area. And, you know, some of the feedback that I got is we don't want to do anything that change any of the historic buildings in such a way that it would prevent their addition to the registry in the future. And for us to cover our bases, it's really inexpensive and really easy for us to do that. Talking with Jane and Steve with Blue Planet Consulting, and they mentioned that the cost of the person who came and studied the Chardonnay when that was one was up was, you know, less than, I think if he had charged, it would have been less than $300. So I think certainly taking a look at the properties and, you know, figuring out how to allow this to go forward, but making sure we're not doing anything that's going to damage the historic integrity of any of the properties is a low-cost thing that we as a city can do to help preserve what could be a historic district there. And finally, the future Skyway. Obviously, I'm not a fan of putting the Skyway across there. I did send an opinion from a national expert on historic districts to Stephen, who can forward it on to the council. But basically, in addition to not being supported by the adopted DMC and Rochester Downtown Master Plans, an eventual Skyway across Broadway would also probably prevent a district from being created there. But at that point, it's moot, because we probably need to amend that plan before we do that anyways, and that's not a discussion for this one, but I just wanted to point out that that's part of the historic discussions as well. So, you know, really, in terms of the actions that I think is, you know, let's make sure we can achieve the preservation we're looking to do. Let's make sure we can get the other buildings that are potentially part of this network on this block, give them the option or ability in the future to connect up, and I think we have a pretty good solution for all the parties involved.
All right. Others? Mr. Quenvoll, did you want to... I think there's a bit of a historical element, to use that word, to the Skyway system as well. I think the original Skyway plan predates, I think, perhaps all of us on the current elected council. Is there any insight you could share?
I'd like to make a few comments, not necessarily about this particular Skyway, but Skyways in general. And I know in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, there's been more of the anti-Skyway sentiment, and that sentiment also was one of the reasons that we didn't seek an extension to the south through the 318 Common Building once it was built, because there was a thought that a Skyway shouldn't be extended on 4th. And personally, I think a Skyway extended on 4th all the way down to the university permanent campus would be wonderful. But let me, I've had 45 years of experience in downtown revitalization efforts in Rochester. And the first 20 years in my involvement with downtown, there weren't any skyways at all. And there wasn't a significant vitality that existed in that downtown either. Then we went ahead and did the D5 project, it called it at that time. It was a Radisson Hotel, and then it was the Galleria, and then it was an office building, and the Marriott, and then the parking ramps along with that, and the Skyway extensions. And all of a sudden, there was a more considerable vitality that existed in the downtown, and it created the downtown that exists today. And I think the Skyways have been a very important part of creating that vibrancy that currently exists in the downtown. You wouldn't have it without those Skyways. And so from my viewpoint, I would think that the governing body, your current governing body and future governing bodies, would be well served by continuing that system and making it where it looks feasible to do so, extending it. I also had some experience in the city of St. Paul in 1967 and 1970. I worked in the St. Paul City Planning Department as a part-time basis when I was going to college and was involved in the downtown land use plan and update. And the downtown at that point in St. Paul, there weren't any skyways, and the downtown didn't have much going for it, quite frankly. And now, I mean, they have a significant skyway system in St. Paul. If you go down there at noon or something, I mean, there's a significant activity in that system. And the interaction of people that you wouldn't, you know, you go down, you've got walking the streets today, you're not going to see much of that. And even if, and I just got back from walking to the Charter House, and all that activity that goes on that you wouldn't have at this time of the year on the streets. And you wouldn't have that vitality in the downtown without skyways. And so I think I've been somewhat negligent in the last few years by not speaking out more against that anti-skyway sentiment that exists. And I would hope that you as the governing body would keep an open mind about the value of the skyway system and possibly extend it even more than we have right now.
Mr. Rojak.
Well, and I think if we're going to have that discussion, I mean, we spent many millions of dollars hiring some of the, you know, best consultants in the world to come in and come up with plans. And, you know, I think it's careful when you talk about skyways that you always need to separate what is the value of a skyway versus what is the value of a safe and convenient connection. Because a lot of times skyway was our solution to not having safe and convenient connections in a lot of areas. But, you know, to hear this coming in front of the council now, I don't think is the appropriate time to have that discussion. I think the appropriate time is when the, you know, when we've got these consultants in and we can bring it back to rediscover that, because we relied on their technical expertise to craft our plans. And, you know, a lot of the cities that have focused heavily on skyways are making some changes in regards to that now as well.
And the only reason I brought it up for Stephen Bennett is the plan that was in place or chosen some years ago, I think an extension across Broadway was anticipated at some point. Mm-hmm. Further south, whatever, that was not anticipated, but then that predates the UMR discussion as well. So that was my only reason for bringing it up. Some of what we're talking about here potentially in the near future.
Well, the Joel Weiss project, we do have an easement that would allow the extension. So mm-hmm. We did think about that.
Okay. Mr. Campion.
I was just going to say, hearing that sentiment about at least strategically and maybe on a limited basis, as long as we're all, I think there's general consensus on a limited basis, enhancing connectivity to the skyway where it already exists is probably a positive. I'm wondering, Hal, if you could share, I mean, it kind of sounded like we were tiptoeing a little bit around if a south southerly connection is possible. And I want to kind of hear if you'll come to the table to talk about a southerly connection, because I completely agree with Stephen to the point that these are economic generators. I mean, being connected to the Skyway is, I mean, that's why you're here, I assume. I mean, it's an economic generator. So, you know, we're interested, I think, in making as many properties as possible share in that system. I'm kind of wondering if you'll come to the table to talk about that a little bit more.
Well, I'm a firm believer in anything possible. We had this discussion over a year and a half ago with Helen Rowan and her architect at that time. Actually, it was September 15th of 2014. Heard nothing since, really, other than the recent letter that came forward to the council, I think, a few weeks ago from the attorney that's representing her, I believe, or the development entity. So, yeah, it was silent for a year and a half. So, and as far as section. I think there's the other option is to extend it, if you want to go south, come across the alley now and extend it south from whatever development might occur on the other side of the alley. To me, that has some logical potential. There's buildings there that maybe could be part of the future development. As you know, there's buildings on the south side of 4th that have potential for development. One prime corner that, to me, appears that it should have something done that could potentially benefit from this highway. That could be the start of what connects all the way down to the campus. So there's other options other than trying to slice up our second floor. We just can't slice it up every which direction and impede the current tenants' plans there. We're trying to provide options for the similar tenant, I guess you'd say, to occupy a space that was contiguous and benefit their organization. And with their desire to help us activate what has been a dead building, frankly.
And I guess, like, I'm in my head, I'm playing through the balancing act of I realize it's an inconvenience to have your second floor bisected by a skyway. I also realize that the skyway has tremendous economic value, otherwise it probably wouldn't be connected to your building in the first place.
Sure.
So to some degree, you know, I think Councilmember Wojcik's statement of if we're going to talk about the future of the skyway in this area, the time to do it is now, probably not after, you know, we've started asserting which direction things are going to head. So I don't know, Terry, if this is something you feel like we need to have more discussions about, or we already know what where the options are down here. You're looking for council direction on which of these properties we think should eventually be connected.
Yeah, actually, I think, you know, ultimately it's a discussion that has to happen. And I knew, you know, I think everybody in the room could see it coming at some point in time. And I think we're here. You know, the previous the slide that I had up here, you know, kind of shows what that, you know, existing plan from 1988 indicated where locations were. Well, there have been a little bit, some deviations to that over the course of time with the extension of the Skyway from the 3rd Street ramp over into the 318 building, then making the, potentially then, if this connection were to be made, obviously the logical place in the future, if there ever were going to be a Skyway going across Broadway, wouldn't be back up here where it was shown in 1988. It would be here, because when this bridge was built 6 or 7 years ago, as Steve mentioned, provisions were made there for corridor easements through the city center building. So if there were an inclination to close the loop, so to speak, this is where that would logically have to happen. At this point in time, I certainly don't see a need for it, and it may never be there, because if the riverfront properties develop, there may be ample opportunities for them to tie into the system, either into the existing bridge and through the corridors that come through some of the buildings here, be it, you know, the bank building and or the Holiday Inn building or City Center building. So we may never really need this. And then, as Councilmember Wojcik indicated, the master plan that was put together in 2010, you know, did not envision skyways being extended south of 4th Street outside of the current central business district, of which 4th Street is the boundary thereof. So this area in purple is kind of the extent of the area identified within the master plan back in 2010, in which future skyway expansion could be considered with new development. So with the bridge coming in here, and then potentially that connection being made across the alley, the one that Hal and Grant are requesting, obviously, going back to that other slide, you know, potentially could make that connection across Broadway at some point in the future if it were deemed needed. But again, it did not envision anything going, you know, south of 4th Street. Now, I mean, I guess that does beg the question, as you know, Steve indicated, is that something we should look at or consider for the future with the growth that may be expected in coming forward as part of the, you know, DMC initiative? I don't have the answer to that question today. I don't know. I'm just using the downtown master plan essentially as my guide at this particular point in time, and that indicates at this particular juncture we don't need to provide for that system going across four.
Mr. Villebeck, then Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I think before we get too far down this discussion on where skyways are going or not, I think we got to bring it back to where we're talking
right
about. Tonight we're talking about Hal wanting to go across the alley. I do think we should have this discussion. I do think that it needs to be put on our cow list in the future, like it's not getting long enough. But I do believe that it needs to be discussed. I think another aspect, too, is back in 1988, I don't think they were talking much about the historic preservation of our buildings and what a skyway does or does not do to that. And I think it would be important for us to have those discussions. But for tonight's discussion, we're talking that Hal said he wanted to go across the 18 feet. He's willing to go south. He's not asking for city participation at this point unless we do that, and that remains an option. So I think really we should focus on that and then put this on the list for a future discussion, because we've seen where the skyways, the bridges were going to go versus where they didn't go. And again, anything we do doesn't tie a future council in for anything they do. But I do think that we should, it's been a long time since we've had the discussion on sky bridges, and those would be a good thing to have. But again, for this case, Hal's asking for 18 feet. He's made it very clear that he's willing to discuss going south with the skyway, with the city participation at this point. He's not asking for that. And until we have the other participants here, and that would be the building owners of those buildings as well as the people who would like to have that sky bridge go to their building, that discussion really should be a later date.
Mr. Hickey.
Talking about that discussion for a later date, I put in a plug for this last week, but I mean, already this downtown master plan's over 5 years old. As part of our comprehensive plan, I think we need to really take a look and see which elements have stood the test of time here, and this might be an example of something that needs to be updated. Thinking on these things changes over time, and skyways, I think, are an important part of our city.
All right, anyone else?
Just a final comment, if you don't mind, and I appreciate your time today. As I said when we opened, I didn't anticipate this discussion for a simple 18-foot connection, so it gets so complicated, so I apologize for taking over all your time. I think, like Mr. Gilderbach said, though, we've got a standalone, a single-purpose request here, and I would hope that that wouldn't be what would cloud what we're trying to do. As we progress in Rochester and we keep trying to allow developers to be active and do things, I would hope we wouldn't continue to delay their process for some unknown or unforeseen planning process and or future project that no one knows about right now. So I appreciate your willingness to consider that. This is an independent request, and we've always been willing to work with the city. That's part of why we have this agreement. We were showing our willingness to work with the city on options in the future. So I think we've already shown that. We're certainly willing to talk. Like I said, it's been a year and a half, and no one said a word to us until this came up. So I really don't know if there's anything tangible that we should have to respond to. So with that, I appreciate your time.
Okay. So I think the only question for the council, unless you have other questions or comments, does this sound like it's ready to at least come forward for formal discussion and action? And what would be your preference? Let it come forward at under reports and recommendations, or is your preference for some sort of public commentary? What would be your pleasure, Mr. Russell?
Well, I guess, isn't this part of the agreement already? So, I mean, right? In the original agreement that they had?
Just related to that part that was within the 318 building.
Oh, okay.
So we would need a new, another agreement for the section of bridge going over the alley, which, typically we have not done as a public hearing in the past when they've came forward as part of a development project. I think they've typically been on as a reports item. And then also, I don't know if it would be a revocable permit or easement to allow for the bridge to extend over the public right-of-way. I would have to confer with the attorney and our public works staff about the best way to accommodate that part of it. But in any event, unless the council deemed it appropriate, we wouldn't have typically brought those back as public hearings.
So it's been in the past under reports and recommendations?
In the past, that's how we've done those. Typically, they've been part and parcel of larger, you know, redevelopment projects where there may have been a hearing on the TIF plan type thing or whatever, and then the typically a development agreement that goes along with it and a Skyway agreement that goes with it have come back as reports items.
Mr. Campion and then Mr. Quinville.
Do we need to talk about the access southerly, regardless of whether that's through the commons or through the other side of the alleyway?
Well, that's the dilemma. I mean, to me, how big of a concern is that? I don't see it being, to tell you the truth, I don't honestly see it being, maybe, you know, Hal probably sees it different than I do. I don't see it as being very viable to extend this bridge across the alley and then come south on those buildings on the east face of the block. Or at least in the reasonable future. I think that's more than likely going to be a long time coming there. Plus, I don't know where you'd bring it across. Once you got to the southern end of it, I'm not exactly sure, you know, where you'd tie in. If you're going to do that, presumably, I guess in my mind, you'd be doing it because potentially you'd want to go across 4th Street in the future. Where would you go? That's the Rosie Bell. You know, when you get to that point, you're at the corner of the Rosie Bell property, which I have no idea what may or may not happen on that piece in the future.
Mr. Quinville, then Mr. Woodrick.
Two things, I think, was I hear Hal and Grant was talking about a private connection across the alleyway, and that's the city wants a public easement. So there'd either be the fact we want a public easement, that'd be now, and Rush, you just gave them a revocable permit for their private skyway access. The other item with between Hal and Grant, that's sort of kind of, I'd suggest you leave it to them to work it out. We get kind of indicated to Helen that, well, she wants to do something, got to work out something financially with Helen and Grant. And unfortunately, I think we made a mistake when we did the 318 common building by not having that easement to the south. And we do it over again, would have sure recommended that we have an easement to the south, but it's not there now. And they have a problem with the mortgage and all other licenses or leases that they have, and so it's something that the city can't really work out very well. I'd leave it to those private property owners to work it out.
Okay.
If we ultimately, there's no way we're crossing the alley twice, especially on the south end where you have to navigate around the Francis to get in there. That just is never going to happen. Right. So we can cut that line of thought out for now. I just want to preserve our options. This is the only time we have any ability to negotiate on an even footing. So what we don't put in the contract now, we lose our leverage forever. So the three things that we need to do is figure out if we're going to do anything with the access to the south. It needs to be now. I agree. I was on the council too, and I was part of making the, you know, it was probably a mistake not preserving the access to the south. There is an opportunity here to fix it. We don't have to pay anything or do anything now. We just need to create the opportunity for an easement there. Maybe that doesn't work out, but we can at least look at the language. We also need to figure out how we're going to give the potential of other buildings on the west side of that block to potentially access this should it become a public skyway system. And lastly, you know, anything that we want to do to address the preservation issue. Also, we need to have language in there accounting for it too. Those three things are all fairly easily accomplished, and they don't necessitate action, but at least they give the council the ability to make those decisions should we want to. Otherwise, anything we do in the future could be much more expensive.
All right, any final comments or, again, direction on how we bring this forward?
Randy, you mind if I make one final comment?
Okay.
Well, it's new to me to negotiate because we have an agreement, frankly. This one we created 6 years ago to extend it, so I didn't recognize if we're being negotiating for the agreement we already have. I guess that's one point. I indicated earlier we had a meeting with a property owner in the south a year and a half ago, so we just can't keep waiting and waiting and no response. So we've got I hope we're trying to activate that floor for a prominent tenant in Rochester, and timing is important. And like everything, timing is critically important. So to wait and discover other things about Skyways, I still see how we can continue to delay progress. And want to have to have another study or another reason to delay things. So I would appreciate your thoughts about that because timing is critically important.
Okay. Ms. Means, do you have a comment or a preference for how we proceed?
Well, actually, if the agreement has already been left and if you're only talking about the 18 feet, can we then have additional, go ahead and, you know, come to some consensus on letting this go forward without further delay? But then to have follow-on meetings about the access and historic preservation and the whole Skyway plan. So that's, I would like to go ahead and not have the developers wait any longer than they need to. But to have those discussions so that the next one that comes up, we will have these things worked out. Perhaps the downtown master plan and the comprehensive plan will mesh those for further discussions.
Okay, Mr. Bildebeck and Mr. Spade.
And I don't think that Mr. Wojcik was asking for additional time. What he's asking is that in the, when we ask for the reports and recommendations, if that's the route we go, that we can put in there a mention of the the access to the south, that want to make sure it doesn't have historical impact, and then the third part that was talking about the west. That's not asking to make this any longer, just the same to put those statements in the reports and recommendations so they're there.
Could I follow up on that? I'm just so what would we, what would you indicate in your RCA or your approval on that for the access to the south, for instance?
Well, I think Hal had said that he was open to negotiating with people in the south, and if the city ever felt that we wanted to make this a public access, that we have that opportunity. So whether it be a reversible permit, and then we issue...
So would you just be saying that the owners should, the property owners should work together to see what they can achieve?
Well, yeah, but if we choose to make it a city park, again, just make sure that it's in the city, that Hal has indicated that he was part of... He would turn this over if we did 50-50 to make this a part of the city access system. It's not asking him to do anything extra, it's just making sure that the verbiage is put in to protect the city, that it give us that opportunity if that's something we want to do in the future.
And I think that might be a question for either Terry Spade or the city attorney. How do you reduce that to language, especially language that has any, you know, enforceability, to preserve those sorts of options, especially if it's something a little nebulous? I don't know what the exact how that verbiage would read.
I'm not necessarily sure how the language should be crafted, but I would have to believe at some point in time the owners would be looking to the city to assist with some sort of redevelopment of that property on the east side of the alley. At that particular point in time, I guess if the council wasn't satisfied that what you're asking for now hasn't been done, you have the option of not participating in the project.
And I do agree it would be good if we can go forward with this piece of the project that we do know or have concretely before us. But with appreciation for Mr. Wojcik's comments, I don't know how we express that sentiment in language going forward, Mr. Wojcik.
I think Mr. Atkins understands what I'm looking for, so I would just ask that he give us the option to look at.
Do you understand, Mr. Atkins?
But it's not holding your feet to the fire, I guess, is where we're at.
It wouldn't be legally binding, I don't think.
Well, if they're asking for permission to put something over the alley, there's got to be some sort of an agreement for the issuance either of the granting of an easement, we own the property and fee, or a revocable permit. And so as part of that agreement, if you want to put conditions on the granting of that revocable permit or that easement, that would make up the negotiation that I think the council member is asking for.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it allows them to go forth and right, protect us in the future if we wish to do something different.
I understand that, but just picking up on one of the comments about the preservation mm-hmm. of the historic element, how would you, what sort of language would you put in there? It sounds like it would be a somewhat subjective. A condition would be we want to preserve, do this on the condition that we preserve the historic element of.
Here's a very simple, low-cost way that we could cover our basis, is that we as the city could fund an expert with regards to national or state preservation standards to evaluate any changes to any buildings that are part are beneficiary of this agreement to ensure that no changes are being made that would prevent their consideration as a historic property in the future. Probably not going to affect anything, but covers our basis. Fairly easy to implement, low cost.
So that, in other words, you have to wait for this expert to get back before you decide whether or not they can proceed.
Not
on this piece of it.
Not on the Skyway itself.
I think there's sentiment that we want to let this piece of the project at least be heard.
And where this comes from is there's concerns that, well, after the Skyway, are these buildings going to be essentially all the historic character stripped out of them? That's the concern. I don't think that that's the case. But by simply inserting that language in there, we've covered our bases.
So does that mean that we could go ahead without having this consultant come in? Or do we have to wait until, you know, we hire a contract with someone, and even though this is time sensitive?
I can't speak to, you know, the time that would take, other than to say that the person who reviewed the Chardonnay was, you know, had it done almost immediately. And the idea would be, as you know, as part and parcel to the building permits, there would be a...
So what if the consultant says it's going to screw up some stuff historically?
That's the thing. That would be part of the expectation in granting this easement, is that historic properties be preserved.
Okay, that wasn't the way I was thinking it was going, but go ahead. Other comments? I thought we were trying to come up with a way to let this particular piece of the project, hopefully...
When you say the project, you mean the Skyway or the building itself?
I'm sorry?
When you say the project, you mean the Skyway itself? Or the building it's connecting to. Yeah, and that's not going to, the Skyway itself isn't going to be the issue. It would be changes to the benefiting properties that would be subject.
And the usage in that building, you don't have any control over as long as it meets the zoning. I mean, you can't really control what's going into that as long as they have permitted uses with the zoning.
Right, but the physical,
well, I don't know what you achieve
the physical changes to the building. You're right. I mean, the use doesn't, as long as it's a, you know, just about any use will work in there.
Just looking at the exterior of the building?
Well, and I don't consider myself to be a preservation expert, and I don't really know if any of us on the council are, but we do have a preservation commission and a lot of people that do have expertise. And what I'm saying is, let's just craft the language to give ourselves, you know, protect ourselves in the long run.
All right. I was just trying to see what you achieve by all of these so-called conditions. Are you achieving anything practical?
Well, and that's why I was struggling with how that language would read, that it, you know, preserves that sentiment for those sorts of options that Mr. Rogic talked about while letting this alley piece hopefully proceed. I don't know.
And to your point, I don't necessarily know the answer to all this either, but... by simply asking the city attorney to, as part of the reports and recommendations, give us some optional language that goes with it. And that then we can have people who actually know something about this stuff weigh in.
I don't think any, and again, this isn't trying to stop that project. Yep. We want this project to go forward. It's nothing like if you were to expand the Skyway to the south or elsewhere, mm-hmm. does that have any impact? And so I'm more than willing to give the city attorney a crack at writing the language and then go forward.
And we're still talking about bringing this in our reports and recommendations?
I think so.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything otherwise.
I mean, if we think there's going to be a lot of public contention over it, I don't think there would be probably based on the early conversation, but we always have the option of switching it over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so any other comments? Let staff take a crack at the language and bring it forward under reports and recommendation. Okay?
Okay.
Let's see if we can keep this thing moving. All right, thank you. Our one other item, I'm sure it'll be a short one as well. Review of the Main Street
short
condition
ones only
report.
Four pounds, right?
Report. And I'm sure everyone read this and has it absorbed. So. All right.
Preservation stuff. I might put in touch with somebody who can speak clearer about it.
All right.
Okay. We'll do.
As we get into this, Richard, do you want any introductory comments before we get going?
Other than this is the report that you agreed or you authorized the funding for to address the premature failure premature payment failures in the South Main Street area. So SEH was hired, and they're here to make the overview presentation of the report.
Okay.
If I could just make mention that there are a number of the property owners, a few of the property owners or representatives, property owners here today, and they have attended very faithfully the previous meetings, as Ed knows, and has also attended some of our pre-meetings that we've had on the site. So.
Go ahead.
Appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you about this project today. My name is Mark Obermeyer. I'm the principal with SEH, and with me today is Jenna Obernolte. She is the project manager for this project. We're going to cover a couple things with you this afternoon. Hopefully, can do that fairly quickly. Talk a little bit about a little bit of history on the project, the scope and findings of the study, and then get into some of the improvement strategies. As Doug mentioned, we have had opportunity to meet with the property owners on at least two different occasions. We've had the first meeting to discuss some of the preliminary findings of the report and then present the final report in early December. So. So I want to talk and just set the stage a little bit. The image on these next couple slides hopefully helps illustrate some of the pavement deficiencies that we've seen, generally characterized by excessive cracking. And really the problem there is it tends to let water infiltrate into the soil underneath the pavement and then start creating damage. Again, this shows some of the areas out in Chops and Main, and this one in particular illustrating areas where there's been city maintenance crack sealing. You see some patching up near the top of that slide there. And this one really showing pavement distress, in this case in a wheel line at one of the intersections. These conditions are certainly not typical of what you'd expect for pavement that's just 10 years into what can be up to a 50-year design life. And so it's certainly what spurred the discussion and then the hiring of SEH to come in and take a look at the study. There's three parts to the study that really frame the scope of work. First of all, examining the premature deterioration of the pavement and what's happening out there, and then really getting into the underlying issues, factors that contributed to that deterioration. And then lastly, looking at what are the alternatives? How do we address the problem and some of the solutions that we find out here. There's been a lot of things that have occurred out in this area over the years, and so this slide really is to just illustrate that probably going back to 1995 when the corridor study for Highway 63 was completed, the development of the interchanges, and then a number of different projects. So the red bars that you see are all separate city owner contracts, and then there was also a city improvement with the sanitary sewer work that was done out there. So there was work that occurred over a 6 to 7 year period. Multiple parties were involved across the way, and then you see on the right here, the, where the maintenance began back in 2011, and then the study. So a lot of different parties, a lot of work over a number of years in this area. Looking at that history, and just quickly summarizing, I know you have the slides in front of you as well. What we found essentially is Main Street is built over some poor soils. They're not ideal necessarily as we would hope to see, and so that was one of the things we found in looking over the project. Main Street itself is built on an alignment that at one time had an old drainage ditch through that area, and so a lot of fill material was brought in, but the best material was used essentially under the buildings that are out there, the development that occurred. And some of the not as good material was used in conjunction with the street and utility portions of the project. So look at the pavement part of the project. There wasn't a specific soil analysis that was completed for pavement design. Instead, the pavement out there followed what was being done at that time in the city, followed a city standard for how much bituminous material, how much aggregate material would typically have been used. And that's essentially how the project began to move forward. There were three different contractors that were used as part of the multiple projects that we showed you. And the other thing that we found in looking back is that the streets in this area had a substantial amount of construction traffic in the first few years after the project was complete, more so than would typically be expected on a newly constructed road. Lastly, the city patching and the maintenance activity began about 5 years after the project was first complete. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and have Jenna talk a little bit more about this study.
All right, so with the study, we looked at three different portions of it, the traffic, and geotechnical, and hydrologic. With the traffic study, we did traffic counts and to really see where we were for loading at this time. With the geotechnical study, we partnered with Braun Intertech and did soil borings and looked at what soil was underneath the road. We also looked at the aggregate base and the bituminous material that had been used out there. And then the hydrogeologic study partnered with Barr and looked at potential sources for the water that is in the subsoils. So this slide actually shows what was considered standard for this type of roadway, which is 4 inches of bituminous with on top of 6 inches of aggregate base, which would be on native, undisturbed soils. What was designed was 4 inches of bituminous and then 6 inches of class 2 on 3 inches of class 3, which gives us a higher granular equivalency than what was normally used, but this was built upon native soils that were used as fill. And then what our study reveals is we have that section on top of very saturated, poorly drained, expansive soils. So again, as Mark said, with the history, there was a lot of truck traffic, construction truck traffic that was introduced to the pavements right away in its life. And that can take away part of the life. So there were over 17,000 trucks just to do the parking lots of those properties alone. That didn't include building materials for building them, and also it didn't include construction traffic for the extension of the canal. So our geotechnical findings, we found that settlement is not an issue. The subgrade material is mixed, and the best on-site material was not used under the roadways, and the soil under the pavement is saturated, making it susceptible to freeze thaw. Also, we found that the gradation doing testing on the bituminous material. The gradations show that it is a fine material that does not meet the city ordinance specifications. And for a fine mixture, it has a low asphalt content.
Do you guys want to take questions now, or do you want to wait till the end?
Go ahead. I'd interject.
This particular question and this particular finding caught my eye. I'm wondering, does it not meet or did it not meet? Is it today's standard or is it the standard of the development at the time it was built?
Today's standard.
Okay. Do we know if it met the standard at the time it was built? Particularly this one about the asphalt being, there's something about the quality of asphalt that was used was below today's standard, but was it below the standard at the time it was designed?
I was unable to find test results from when it was actually put in.
I think the question more is to the spec at the time. It was built, did it meet the spec at the time?
And I don't believe the spec of the bituminous has changed that much in the 10 years.
I don't ever remember it changing.
2005.
So the general consensus would be if it does not meet now, it did not meet then?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm assuming, obviously we can't go back on a contract that's 10 years old, but I assume the contract, the city owner contract, SID, the road would be built to city standards?
Correct, yes.
Okay, and so we may not be able to go back, but the contract was violated.
Since we're discussing, so
okay.
You just adopted new city owner contract
yep.
standards, this was one of the things
yep.
that you now have changed, that there will be testing of the material
okay.
right after it's placed to determine if it does meet spec.
Well, and
it, there will be a pavement design report ahead of time,
yeah.
which will call out a job mix formula. It has to be approved by MnDOT.
It's very helpful in determining whether or not the public should be obligated to bail out a developer or whether private parties should be able to.
Okay, continue.
Right. So the hydrogeologic analysis looked at the different sources of groundwater. One of the findings was that there is no connection between the ponds and the groundwater, so the ponds are very well locked in. And then the fill material is wet throughout and it holds water and does not dry out over time. Another one of the findings is that the irrigation system is a contributing source to the saturation of the soils under the roadway and also the rainwater acts just like the irrigation system. So that type of surface water gets under the pavement and the soils just hold on to it and it stays.
So what we were really finding by looking at all aspects of this project and the three parts of the analysis that Jenna talked about, the traffic, the geotechnical, and the hydrogeologic, was really to look at, again, those contributing factors. And there's found is that there isn't one factor, there's multiple factors that contribute to what we're seeing in the street conditions out there. First and foremost, and again, I think Jenna has given you a fair amount of information on the poor subgrade conditions out there. Going back to the cross-section, it's really the area of fill, kind of the green shaded area that we're seeing, that material is wet, as Jenna said, and it's not going to dry out on its own. If you think about it, it's kind of like a sponge. We were talking about that today. It tends to take water in. It's a clay, mixed clay material, and holds that moisture. So once wet, it's very, very difficult to dry out. So that was the first thing. Secondly, we've talked a little bit already about the bituminous mix. We found that the gradation of the aggregate material is too fine, perhaps, to meet the spec. And then looking at that gradation, that the oil content was a little bit low for us to do that. And really what that does is it means that you can get a weaker section. The bituminous, as you probably are aware, goes down in two layers. When we're looking at bituminous, oftentimes you get a little bit of what's coming out of the plant at that time. There's a specification with it, but the bituminous plant is going to send so it's usually broad enough to meet the specification. But again, what that means is that we can see a little bit of a weaker section than we would normally expect on a project like this. The aggregate base material that sits directly under the bitumens, we also found that that tended to be also a little bit under gradation, the material a little bit too fine. The aggregate base bridges kind of between the subgrade and the bituminous material. And again, looking at that cross section, that's the, you know, the brown material right underneath the pavement that we're looking at there. Again, it contributes to a weaker roadway section overall. All of these things perform together, but it would indicate a weaker section we'd expect.
Mr. Campion.
So the class 2 and class 3 aggregates are what you expected to find?
It was a little bit lighter in the gradation than we would have expected.
Okay, because I thought I remember reading like a class 8 or something different, but basically it still fell within the specification for the appropriate.
So class 2 and class 3 were what were designed? What was the intention to be used for testing those materials? Now, today, they do not meet that specification.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
We talked about the excessive traffic loading during construction. It can be a difficult thing to control. We try to anticipate what that loading is going to be. And again, in this case, we found that that was well beyond what we would anticipate typically for a roadway of that type.
One comment on the traffic. I understand what you're saying there, but I think the report also pointed out overall traffic volumes, since the roadway was constructed, have been less than what was predicted through the GROCOG data. So, in other words, we haven't seen an excessive amount of traffic since the roadway was constructed that might have added to the early deterioration.
Correct. It would be okay. Just in that early, in this early stage, shortly after construction.
Right. Understood.
Next, the irrigation, Jenna mentioned as well, as a contributing source. And the irrigation, of course, is very important to what occurs out there as well. It helps to contribute to the appeal of the area. There's a lot of landscaped areas, public spaces, so while it adds to the appeal, it's the operation of that system that probably is in question. It tends to operate on a daily basis, maybe overwatering in many cases, and creates an excess water, and that water has to go somewhere. So some of it hits the pavement and soaks through some of those cracks, helps to keep that subgrade wet. Some of it soaks through the boulevards, and again, it wets and re-wets that subgrade material, which continues to contribute to the deterioration of the pavement. Lastly, and I guess the most significant contributing factor that we were able to identify is the fact that we have saturated subgrade, and there really is not a way to drain that material. And so that's the biggest issue that we found. A number of things going on as we looked at pavement specs and aggregate specs, but the biggest issue is that the subgrade is wet, and it's wet throughout, and that's where we're seeing the biggest problem.
Does any of the irrigation have an impact on any of the foundations of buildings that are out there?
No, in fact, most of the irrigation that we're talking about is just along the boulevard areas and the public areas as well. So not so much. So again, I think it's the material itself and the irrigation, again, all contributes to having a weak or a weaker than a designed section out there for the roadway loading.
All right. So I know you guys have been talking about the typical lifespan of roadways, and as engineers, we talk about a design life, which is usually between 20 to 30 years, but we also predict that with regular maintenance, we can extend that pavement life to the 40 to 50. So this is one of your maintenance strategies. It was actually adopted based off of a MnDOT policy that shows at certain points of life of the pavement what type of maintenance would be utilized. Out here, this needs to be accelerated, but you also have a maintenance policy for concrete streets. Then what we looked into were improvement strategies for the development. The first one being yearly maintenance. With yearly maintenance, you're already doing it, but what happens is that water stays trapped. We, in the process of stability, remains. The pavement's still moving every year. additional cracking will keep going, and the migration of the water accelerates also. A mill and overlay is also an option, which would increase the pavement structure, but again, the trapped water remains, and we still keep that major problem. Mill and overlay with added subdrain, again, it increases the pavement structure, but the subdrain would allow for some of the water to go, but it won't actually dry those soils. As Mark had said, it's like a sponge, but it's not going to release the water unless other measures are taken. And the fourth strategy would be full reconstruction, removing the pavement and excavate some of those subgrade soils. Adding a geotextile fabric, adding a drainable base with subdrain, and then either a concrete or a bituminous structure. So this section shows what a concrete option would be, which actually with talking to some of the owners would be a preferred section. But utilizing 8 inches of concrete with integral curb over 6 inches of class base with 12 inches of a sand material in the subdrain. Then, so each of those strategies and applied it over the entire subdivision and or the entire development and looked at what costs would be there with a 50-year plan. And this includes accelerated maintenance. Knowing that a mill and overlay is not going to solve the issue, we accelerated what maintenance would be, and at some point in this 50-year life cycle, there is a reconstruction.
So one of the things that we found, again, as part of the study, is that the street conditions vary. Jenna mentioned, as we looked at each of those strategies, the table that you saw, and we'll bring it back up in a minute, whereas if we applied each of those strategies universally through all the streets, we don't think we need to do that because the street conditions do vary a lot. The green area that you're seeing here are streets that would rate out as satisfactory condition right now, and then obviously they vary from fair all the way up to poor, very poor and serious as we get to more of the south end, towards Target in that area. So if you've driven through there, you probably can notice some of those areas are fairly obvious when you see them. And so I think that it creates some additional alternatives of how we might be able to combine strategies and be more cost effective with those. Okay. So we look at four options on ways to do that. And I'm not going to go into the differences between the bituminous and concrete options that cost it out about the same. So we're going to simply talk about them, you know, assuming that perhaps the concrete is where we go. But what this slide is showing is that the blue areas would be areas that the city would continue to do the yearly maintenance. It would be some crack repair, maybe some minor patching, and so on. The green area is showing an area where we'd mill and overlay. We'd take off a little bit of that pavement, add some back, and then construct subdrains in those areas. And then the two red areas, those again are the worst condition areas. We'd look at a complete reconstruction in those locations. Second option really just builds on that. We have more reconstruction in this area and a little less mill and overlay. It adds about $350,000 of additional cost because of that reconstruction. But again, whether it's concrete or bituminous, they're in that same cost area of about $2 million to make the necessary changes in pavement. Option three, again, continues to expand how much would be reconstructed. It eliminates all of the mill and overlay. And for all practical purposes, the mill and overlay gets you a little time, but it doesn't really solve the problem. And then we're continuing to do yearly maintenance on that part of the pavement that's in okay shape right now. And then lastly, option four would be if we would consider a full reconstruction of everything within the development. Showed you those costs a little bit earlier. So this next slide is a little bit busy, but the top table is the one that Jenna had up just a little while ago. It shows the four improvement strategies. Again, I'll remind you that those are applied across all of the streets. And then the pavement below shows if we were to take and combine those, do some mill and overlay, some reconstruction, and saw options one through four, what those would look like if we would put those ideas together. We're representing those in both 2015, today's costs, 2016 dollars now, and then a 50-year life cycle cost, which really takes us through, if we construct it today, assuming that the next reconstruction would be out 50 years from now.
Just a quick question, make sure I understand your maps correctly. Option three, that talked about some reconstruction, would, if I look at the street condition, option three would take care of everything that's considered poor, very poor, and serious, the most egregious.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And so of those options, as we've kind of looked at it, options two and three are probably favored. You know, as we've looked at those, we haven't settled in certainly on a single recommendation, but of those three probably is maybe the most beneficial to consider. So as we look forward in terms of next steps, obviously continuing the yearly maintenance repairs is something that's going to happen in the near term. And then working forward to select what is the most appropriate option. We laid out four combinations of projects here, and we see some clear advantages to some over others. Certainly developing an equitable cost recovery strategy is part of those next steps. And then completing plans and specifications and then implementing those improvements. So that's really the overview of the report. We probably breezed through some of the material quickly, so we're happy to take questions.
So first I'd like any questions from the council for the SEA representatives, and then I would like to hear from some of the stakeholders in that area and what their impressions are of the report and information. So first, any questions for SEH on what's presented?
Thank you.
Very thorough. Okay. Otherwise, I think it was mentioned that we have a couple of stakeholders that have been participating in the discussions, and I'd really like to hear your views on what do you think of all this and so forth. Anyone care to speak over in that back row? And if not, that's fine too.
Not at this time.
Okay.
I'll speak on their behalf.
That's nice.
Well, having said, you know, in the meetings with them, I mean, the issue ultimately comes down to the bullet number three. First, it talks about what are going to be, what's the city's commitment to maintain the roads in a manner that will be deemed as acceptable to their customers. And so the first bullet was obviously important. Are we going to continue to maintain the streets? Yes, we are. We're going to do what we have to do in order to make them passable, make them safe. We're going to do whatever we have to do in that regard. Ultimately, we have to adopt a strategy, but really I think it comes down, and I think I'm speaking for them, it really comes down to the third bullet, is what is the equitable cost recovery strategy? If you remember, and hopefully I'm sure you all do, this all started as an assessment project of 100% of the cost. Mm-hmm. When I first brought it to the council, I obviously got everybody's attention in doing that. And we realized that there's still more discussion that needs to take place on that. You know, what is a fair and equitable method of cost recovery? You know, is there any assessment? Is it a long assessment? Is it some guarantee that there will be no reassessment within a certain period of time? You know, assessment agreements, if you will. There's a lot of things that we can talk about, but until we really know what the cost is, and that's the second bullet, what are the appropriate options and what will the cost be, it's really hard to get into the specifics of an equitable cost recovery strategy. Everybody's concerned about the condition. Nobody wants to see the roads get any worse than they are. We've made a commitment. We'll continue to maintain them, again, in a safe and passable manner. But as it was pointed out in the slides, continuing that maintenance approach will, in the long term, be the most expensive. We don't have $2 million available in the CIP to implement any strategy two or three. We're going to have to figure out how that fits into the five-year CIP and what projects probably get pushed out because this one may have to move forward. So that's a process we have to continue to work with.
Mr. Ruskin.
I guess being this is in my area and I've been involved with meetings, I guess I'd, you know, to maybe give food for thought, maybe council's okay with it. We staff and myself would meet with the property owners and see kind of what we can come up with as maybe a best option for moving forward. None of these are easy to swallow for anybody right now, and you know, we have heard a little bit from some of the owners and so on, but I don't know, Richard, does that make some sense for us to kind of look at that?
Yeah, I think we heard what they said. I mean, they're saying we didn't buy property out here with the intention of having to start making special assessments 10 years after the roads were built, and we didn't obviously intend for the roads to be in that condition. So there's some acknowledgement that as part of a business plan or anything for the area, these are unexpected costs, and if there is to be any sort of an equitable cost recovery strategy, it's got to take that into account. But I think, yes, continue to meet with the group and talk about these strategies. I think we ultimately, though, have to get to the point of reaching some direction or consensus on the appropriate strategy. Mark, if you could go back to that slide, I think, again, as Mark indicated, strategies 2 or 3, I think, city staff might be leaning more toward 3 right now, but again, it's somewhere in that range of, you know, $2 million to $2.5 million is ultimately what we're going to need, and we aren't going to be able to do anything other than maintenance this current year.
Yeah, and I want to go back to a question Mr. Campion raised earlier. I think it's critical. Do we know that the roadway or the construction was created according to specification at the time? Do we know it was created according to spec? Because the reason I ask that is there any opportunity of, you know, short of some outright legal recourse, some sort of cost sharing at least on the part of some of the contractors that might have been involved? I don't know.
Well, I think the statute of limitation would have expired by now if the roads are 10 years old.
6 years.
So the answer there was yes. And
plus Bill Ryan has a special statute of limitations. He knows
it. You're right. And I honestly don't know the answer to the question. That's why whether they did not meet the spec at the time or they did not meet the current spec, I think the answer given was the specs haven't changed much, but we have to go back and look at that. But the point is that we've got a failure. We've got granular material that is too low in fines. We've got pavement that didn't have enough oil in it, and its gradation had too many fines in it. It's not going to last a considerable length of time, so something's going to have to be done. So is there any recourse legally against anyone? Probably not. Is there a way to work with the contractors that were involved in some sort of going forward as far as if they were to be involved in any remediation or repairs? I don't know.
Have you started that conversation?
No.
Are these contractors who do business with the city on a regular basis?
Several of them are not city contractors that do not do business with the city on a regular basis. So those are mostly...
I got conflicting answers here.
There's one that is. There's one that is.
Okay.
A regular contractor.
Yes. Because I think...
So there's really a blacklist, is what I'm hearing?
Well, not that
no,
so much.
Yes. I think, can there be?
No. So, but when it comes to awarding a contract, you can consider past performance and meeting specifications.
You have to remember that the contractor buys all of his materials. He doesn't produce them. So it's.
But that's the person with whom we have the contract.
Correct. But that person bought the materials. They bought the bituminous. They bought the gravel from someone else who made certain representations to them that this material meets specifications.
Even more removed than that, your contract's with the owner. Who contracts with the contractor? Who contracts with the materials?
Well, I think we would want to very closely follow the money on that one. Mr. Wojcik and then Mr. Campion.
If this road had been built to the standard that we had expected at the time, I would have a lot more sympathy and feel a lot more ownership to the issues that are out there. I mean, we can check the standards, but I thought it was actually explicitly stated in that report that it didn't meet the requirements at the time. Maybe I misread that, but
have to go back.
But there's been almost no change in those surface specs in the last 10 years. And I think equitable is the key thing, and it's not only equitable with the owners and the developers down there, but it's also equitable with the rest of the taxpaying public. And my idea of equitable should be that the rest of the taxpaying public should be no worse off after the solution than before the problem started. And, you know, to put it in perspective, we'd pay 50% of a reconstruction after 50 years, and I may be willing to consider 10% after 10 years. But I just don't see us, I don't think we should be in the business of bailing out this kind of shoddy work. And I know it kind of pushes the problem back on other folks, but having also sat down and talked with some of the people that are now on our maintenance staff that worked out there when these were being done, I thought that was a pretty eye-opening experience as well. And I just have a hard time throwing more taxpayer dollars into roads when we're not maintaining the rest of our network nearly as well as we need to.
So I just, quick clarification, the report does say, and I only know because I cut and pasted this out, it says, the test results show that neither the pavement nor the base material met the required city/MnDOT standard specification.
That's what I thought was
the And I just want to make sure I understand, Richard, on the maintenance, and I know we're committed to keeping them passable, but I would really like to know if this keeping it passable grows outside a maintainable burden for the city. Because there's an additional thing that says, you know, we got maintenance to do all over, and I think I wrote shit to this extent last night that said, I think based on the numbers provided by the engineering firm today, we're talking about, you know, the expectation is about $3.68 is spent per square yard per year on maintenance based on the numbers that they're coming up with. You know, if it gets to the point where we're spending $10 or $20 in this specific area, you know, that's going to really eat away. We already are not putting enough into the street maintenance. You know, that is it when I call to get my pothole filled on the northwest side for my resident that they can't get their pothole filled. You know, how are we going to make this equitable for all the people that are looking to do it? If we're going to be, you know, I hate to say bankrupting, but we're going to be emptying out some of these maintenance accounts to do this, I think it's going to get, our problem's going to get worse in other parts of the city until why we make this better. I somewhat disagree that in this context, you know, I'd really like to see us find some way. I want to know who did this, who works with us. I want them to be held accountable for this work. If it's a decade ago and they don't want to be held accountable, get out there with shovels tomorrow and start fixing it. You know, work out something with us to do this. But foisting a $4 million problem on the taxpayers is really something we should not be condoning. That's really, I'm glad to see we have the new standard. It's great, but we have to fix this real problem today.
So, Mark, could you go back to the pictures at the beginning? So, this particular section of roadway, I'm just using this as an example, probably won't require much maintenance this spring. Okay, we go to the next picture. This one probably will, and we'll probably end up doing a patch like you see in the upper left-hand corner, maybe 100 feet or so of this, because this pavement will probably break up this spring. Okay, if you go to the next picture. That wheel rut right there probably will fail this spring. And so we'll be doing a patch there. Now, if you notice the lane to the right, doesn't look too bad, the right turn lane, but this lane, this left turn lane here, so there'll probably be patching. We do patching all over town with failures like this. So the impact on the roughly $2 million that you gave us this year for making repairs to these particular areas will cost some amount of money. We're estimating it could be as much as, you know, $100,000. Okay, so that's about, 5% of the overall maintenance budget that we have for road improvements. It could be that much. It may not be that much, but it could be that much. So we will, again, we will not allow this or any road to get to the point that it's not passable or it's not safe. And so we have those decisions to make every spring. based on the conditions. So, you know, it's not a perfect scenario where everything that we've laid out in this year's program are we going to be able to deliver because we don't know what kind of spring we'll have.
It's more likely in this case, though, that we're, you know, I think in terms of poker, you're throwing good money after bad, right? Because we know that it's failing. I mean, other roadways, we put a patch on
those wet, expansive soils will stay there forever. They'll continue to be wet, continue to be expansive, unless they're removed. They'll never get better. They'll never get better. You have to remove them.
Mr. Wojak.
So long as we have willing partners, I wouldn't necessarily suggest that we go down this road, but we do have kind of a nuclear option on this one too, and I don't know if other governments have done this before, but what we can do is we could probably vacate these roads and say, well, we're happy to accept them back in the public system when you provide us roads that actually meet the public standards. Now, as long as we have partners that are willing to work with us, we don't need to do that, but even though it's drastic, that is, I think, a legal option that's out there.
What does that buy us?
It saves us a whole lot of maintenance. And we're not going to be maintaining anything out there until such point that it comes back into the city as a properly constructed roadway.
You have the problem, though, a little bit of a lot of the businesses bought that property after the roads were built, so they didn't have any really thing to do about that. They're paying some significant property taxes.
I would hope to be a. I think there would be a lot of animosity between the development side and the private real estate side out there, but it wasn't the city that did it to them.
Other questions, comments? Where would you like to go next on this? Let me ask that question.
I'd like to hear what Councilmember Ruska is able to come up with, talking about some of the businesses that are out there, because I think it's. You know, we have to understand what the stomach is. I think the options are pretty clear there. That's going to be about $2.5 million to fix it in any reasonable way. But on top of that, I would say Public Works, I know you guys are already doing this, but we have to minimize any investment in this area until it gets, you know, they have a way to fix it. I know that's not what you want to hear about the roads your customers take into your area, but I have a real tough time throwing $100,000 annually into this area. So I guess that would be my feeling.
All right. Anyone else? Or Mr. Ruska, that's what you wanted to do is meet with?
I'm just offering us an option. I don't know what other options we have right now. I mean, either we're going to, you know, you hit the asset. You know, I think there's an understanding of from the property owners out there that something needs to be done. And I think if you get people around the table and talk through it, maybe we can come up with something that everybody can live with. You know, that, to me, that's the best way to get to at least find out what our options are, and then we can bring back what we find from that, see what the council wants to do.
Yeah, and I would agree. You know, hindsight's 20/20. There's a lot of coulda, shoulda on this project, and I think what's positive is we're trying to affect that going forward with some of the development agreements that we want to have in place. So that's certainly, this has been a learning experience from that standpoint. Just doing the patchwork, you know, I appreciate that we want to keep it passable and, you know, in reasonable good shape, but the patchwork approach clearly is not a long-term solution. It's like putting a Band-Aid on cancer. It's not gonna solve the underlying problem. So I think we are looking at one of those other options that are probably, you know, in the $2 million range. So I do appreciate that it's good to have the property owners come to the table, and, you know, I am very interested in what they're
going to need assessment agreements, or you're going to have... Pardon? You're going to need assessment agreements with those folks before you do things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, you're really going to have a problem.
I'm just not in the business of bailouts, so that's too many things that aren't getting funded right now before we throw, you know, more money after this.
I don't think you can just go out and do an assessment project and hope. Not in this particular circumstance.
You can always vacate, right?
Does that require direction from us to have them start working on those agreements?
Well, I think you need to let him and Richard work on it, but I do think, you know, I don't think you want to do an assessment project and then have to find somebody later on to prove benefit for the project.
You may have assessment agreements depending upon what Ed and the staff and the owners
that's
are
the first step.
Okay. You're going to come back with what?
Before you have assessment agreements, you have to have an understanding as to what is equitable.
Good luck, Ted.
Buy lots of Powerball tickets. They're coming up next time.
Okay, that's the council consensus then. Ed and city staff will work with the property owner.
I think that's what we need, some of that additional.
Improvement options and cost options for the council to consider for this.
Yes. I think Nick mentioned about the standards. I mean, you know, even though we raised the standards, this didn't meet the standards before anyway. You know, I mean, I'm not sure that would have had a big impact on this before, but it sets the bar higher now. Yeah.
And I guess I would just follow up the comment, and I completely agree. The flip side of this is that property, someone made off somewhere with the difference. And I hate to say this, but you may have gotten your building for your business a little bit less than it could. Nobody believes that it's possible, but you know, someone made off with the difference here. And so if, barring someone misrepresenting the goods, somewhere along the line, someone misrepresented something and got away with something. And I think that's the key here is, you know, everyone has some skin in the game now. We have to figure out something that's equitable. And I don't want to see any particular person walk away with this, but everyone's going to walk away sad, I think, is probably how this sounds. And I think for all the taxpayers of the city, it has to be equitable too. And I know a lot of them probably frequent some of the stores down there, but we have to make sure that we get equitable all the way around the table.
Ms. Mead?
Just a question. I'm not... the statute of limitation expired, so you cannot go back to the person that was given the contract. If the material was substandard, I mean, if the if it did not meet standards and it's caused, seems like this has been going on for quite some time. But had we ever talked to the contractors about would they be willing to contribute to any of the cost? I'm through, Mr. City Attorney.
Well, I asked that question of Richard, and he said, no, that conversation hasn't started yet.
Oh, it's a possibility.
As to the statute of limitations, as Mr. Ryan points out, our contract isn't with those who supplied the bituminous and the subgrain. It's with the owner, and then the owner contracts with the contractor and subsequent contracts down the line. But the problem is because the statute of limitations has expired, we're not able to bring what's known as a breach of contract action against the owner. So we can't start that domino effect of everybody bringing in everybody else into the dispute because the statute has expired.
Well, I think it's even broader than that. There's a two-year warranty period here, and that two-year warranty period, at the end of it, projects turned over to the city, and the city's accepted it.
Yeah, I'm not saying whether I have a case to begin with.
At some point, that this work was done adequately, and the warranty ended, and the city took over.
Bill, I'm not addressing the merits of the case. I'm talking procedure right now.
Understand.
All right, so it sounds like we're going to let Mr. Ruska gather some additional information.
I'm just